Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Welcome to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, your primetime destination for bold conversations, unfiltered truth, and real life inspiration. I'm your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, coming to you live from the beautiful San Juan, Puerto Rico. So whether you're listening from across the street or across the globe, I want to thank you for being here tonight and spending a little time with me this Wednesday evening. Last show was a little bit intense. I got some of the feedback, but it was a great show, much needed. We're going to kind of take it easy this episode and have a little fun. How about that? Quick shout out to my cousins who are tuning in from Greenville, Georgia, Harris, Jakari, and Renata Hightower. I love you guys and thank you so much for all of your support. I really appreciate it. You know, Renata actually isn't a very common name. You don't typically run into a lot of Renatas, but I venture to say when you do, they're going to be very unique and kind-hearted people. You know what I mean? And I'm not just talking about your run-of-the-mill kind-hearted. I'm talking about a unique sort of kind-heartedness. I'm talking about the type of person who celebrates your success like it's their own. I think Renatas are the type of women who will not just call to check up on you. They will drive or fly to check up on you personally. And I think Renatas are big on family and connections. They may not get all the support they need from everybody that they love, but they're going to make sure that everybody that they love feels supported and seen. And if they really love you, like if they really, really love you, if somebody F's with you, it's going to be hell to pay with a Renata. It just is. And from my experience, Renatas are kind of like that neutral member of the family who can pretty much stay out of all of the that divisiveness that can kind of creep into your family and all the family drama and politics. They know how to stay out of that mess. You know, we may not be all speaking to one another or have, you know, these little factions and cliques in the family, but the Renatas, they can kind of navigate around all of that and converse with everybody because they know how to stay out of the crap, you know. They're also very forgiving people, and they're not big grudge holders. I'm telling you, if you have a Renata in your family or if you're friends with one, I guarantee you everything that I'm saying about the Renatas I know apply to the Renatas that you know. I guarantee it. It's something about that name. I don't know. I'm 46 years old, and I have never met a Renata that was a shitty person. It's just something about that name. Corey's are pretty good people, too. You know, they typically don't bother anybody. Pam, you know, everyone knows a Pam. Pams are typically good people. Now, I'll tell you one name that's a little different. Pat. I'm talking about if it's a male or a female. I don't care. If you're a Pat or you go by Pat, you probably are a trip. You probably are a trip. But anyway, so shout out to my cousin, Renata Hightower. Shout out to my other good friend, Renata Jordan, who is the reason why I'm on the air today. And shout out to all the other Renatas out there who may be listening. We love you. We appreciate you. All right, so I got some great feedback on the shows we did last month. We touched on toxic friendships. We talked about mental health. And we also talked about the road ahead for the class of 2025. And I actually received a ton of messages from recent grads who caught the playback of the episode we did about Real Talk for the class of 2025. And I'll tell you, a lot of them said it gave them the clarity and the encouragement that they didn't really even know they needed. So if you've got a graduate in your family or in your social circle, then send them the link to that show. Send them the link. Trust me, they'll probably hear something that could really help them to navigate this next chapter. And if you're looking for the perfect graduation gift for a graduate in your circle, especially for someone just stepping into the real world, grab them a copy of my latest book, Not Just a Diploma, Your Playbook for Post-Grad Power Moves. It's a really short read. It's relevant. And I wrote it for people who are in that in-between space, you know, where school ends, but then you're getting into real life and things are starting to get really real. It's a really good resource for them. I priced it adequately, so it's not going to cost you a lot. But it's a great investment for someone who is fresh out of college and they're getting ready for the real world now. So check that out. It's on Amazon. All right. So now that we've shown some love to our grads, we're going to get into our show. The theme for tonight is random rants and real talk. So this is part three of our series where I basically just riff from topic to topic. It just depends on my mood and how many glasses of wine I've had. You know, speaking of alcohol, I'll tell you something. I've noticed that I have cut back a lot lately, especially since I retired back in March. And that actually has saved me a lot of money, to be honest. I didn't really realize how much money I spent on alcohol in a week. It was substantial. So that definitely played a part in my decision to cut back a little bit. And I don't know, aside from saving money, that aspect of it, I also guess I wanted to just kind of prove to myself that I wasn't an alcoholic. And I'm not talking about like the textbook medical definition for alcoholic, because that's some BS. I've never agreed with that. So according to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, you are considered a heavy drinker if you are a man who drinks more than 4 drinks per day or more than 14 drinks per week. Or if you're a woman who drinks more than 3 drinks per day or drinks more than 7 drinks per week. And by the way, they consider a drink or a standard drink one 12-ounce beer, one 5-ounce glass of wine, or just like one shot of liquor or something like that. So that's what they consider one drink. So for me, that's everybody who drinks. Unless you're talking about someone that's like the occasional drinker who only has like alcohol on special occasions or something like that. But unless I'm just a jaded drunk, I think 4 drinks per day, that sounds like a pretty good time for me. You know, in fact, I'm kind of pissed if it's just 4. Obviously, I'm kidding. Or maybe I'm using humor to mask the truth. But, you know, in the very worst case scenario, I would say I'm a very high-functioning alcoholic. And what I mean by that is that regardless of how many drinks one may consider excessive, my alcohol consumption has never been a problem to the extent that it impeded my upward trajectory or my aspirations or got in the way of me achieving any of the goals I set out for myself. It's never been an issue in that regard. And besides, I've always been pretty good at self-correction. You know, like I'm not the guy you're going to have to sit down and have an intervention with. You know, I'm not that guy. I've always had a pretty keen awareness of myself in terms of my negative behaviors and being able to self-correct before things got, you know, too out of hand. And I think for me, drinking had become more of a habit than it ever was like an addiction per se, because it was just something I had become used to doing. To be honest with you, I've been drinking since I was 16. I thought about that too. My parents were very liberal. We had alcohol in the house. They didn't lock it up. They didn't hide it. They didn't do any of that stuff. They was like, look, it's there. My mom's approach, I remember she told me I was 16. She was like, look, you're going to find a way to drink it and to do whatever you want to do anyway. So, you might as well do it in the house where I can see you and kind of supervise. So she didn't really encourage drinking. She was just like, if you're going to do it at home. I know what it's like to be a teenager. I know you're going to get into stuff. Do it at home. So I had a lot of liberty as a kid. And I thank my mom for that, because I think when you take that approach to parenting and you don't try to keep them away from this and try to manipulate the situation, they just end up getting in all types of crap. But when you give them that freedom, still keep an eye on them and, you know, you make sure you know what they're doing, but just give them some leeway and some freedom to F up if they want to, you know, within certain parameters. But they were very liberal with me. I'll say that. And I think maybe the only reason why I did drink at 16 and 17 is A, because it was there. B, I kind of somewhat had permission. And for the most part, I always did it at home, and it wasn't heavy drink or anything like that. It was like on the weekends, you know, and even then it was like a wine cooler. My mom was a Verdi person. She loved Verdi. She loved Spumante, little sweet drink. So we're talking about like a Fuzzy Navel or something like that. You know, anybody that grew up with me remember the Fuzzy Navels I used to get on the weekends. So that type of stuff. So, yeah, it was never really excessive until I started, you know, venturing out and partying and stuff like that. And I would drink a little bit too much, and not so much that it was too much. It was, I mixed a lot. So I would go from beer to wine, and I would have a shot of this. And, hey, Andre, try this. I would have a shot of that. And so I would just end up getting wasted, not because of the amount that I was drinking, but just when you mix so many different things, you're going to get messed up. You know, so it was that was kind of how I grew up. It wasn't a horrible thing, but like I said, it's always been pretty easy for me to self-correct. But as I got older, I had to go through my changes like with anyone else. Oh, the point I was going to make earlier about why I was drinking at 16. Remember the last show when I shared a little bit about just a few of the traumas that I went through at age 13. I think had it not been for those traumas, I would not have leaned on alcohol to cope. Back then, I didn't know I was coping. I just liked the way it made me feel, and it was just kind of like a release or something, you know. But looking back on it, that was my coping mechanism. And so that's why I was telling you, you really have to make sure you get to the root of your traumas, because if you leave it unresolved, you're going to manifest all sorts of different behaviors and coping mechanisms that you don't even realize are coping mechanisms. You just think it's normal behavior, but you're really acting out of trauma. And so that's for anyone with unresolved trauma. So it's nothing to feel ashamed about. We all have some form of trauma and varying levels of trauma in our lives, you know. But yeah, so that's why I was drinking that early in my life. And I think had my mom and dad been more strict, I probably would have kind of went in another direction and been rebellious and found stuff to get into. But since I had a little bit of stuff at home to get into, I didn't go crazy with it. And so it would just become more of a habit than really an addiction for me, just something I was used to doing. And once I retired and relocated to Puerto Rico, I noticed that I was still in that habit of drinking every day. And it took a friend to sort of challenge me on that. And by the way, that's what real friends do. If real friends see where you have a pattern of behavior that's not in your best interest, they're going to call you on it. They're going to confront you on it. That's what a real friend will do, you know, instead of just letting you just continue to go down a path that's not good. But, yeah, I had a friend that sort of challenged me on that, and they were like, Andre, do you really feel like you should be drinking every day, you know? And they asked it very delicately, and at first it's easy to take questions like that and become defensive and be like, look, I'm grown, or I'm not hurting anybody, or why do you care? You know, but they care because they're your friend. And you are hurting yourself if you're drinking every day, whether you're grown or not. So getting defensive is a clue that there's something there that you may want to take a look at it. So in my case, my friend had a point. And so it really gave me something to think about. And I was like, you know what? There really isn't a reason for me to be drinking every single day. I'm retired from federal civil service. I don't have the stress of that leadership position anymore. I don't have the weight of carrying a team and making sure everybody's pulling their weight. And I'm not in the toxic states anymore where daily life is like a nightmare. You know, I'm not around my family who I love. I love my family. And I know it's just not my family, so I'm not demonizing my family, but my family always has some shit going on. So I'm away from all of that. So why am I drinking every day? What for? And so that's when I really understood that for me, drinking had become more of a habit than an addiction, which is my way of unwinding or what I do at the end of the day. So now I've switched things up a bit and I only drink on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that's been working really well for me. Do I necessarily like it? No, absolutely not. I don't. I hate it, actually. But I know when something is in my best interest. And for me, it's in my best interest that I fast from alcohol through the week. There's just no reason to drink during the week unless it's a special occasion or something. And honestly, if I'm not willing to or able to make that type of adjustment and sacrifice for my own health and well-being, then yeah, that would mean I really do have a problem. But boy, do I live for the weekends now. The weekends are like my jam. Now, I never used to be a weekend person. Not really, because I was always a workaholic. I never really did anything on the weekends. I just found myself working in some capacity anyway, whether it was working on the show or, you know, writing another book or doing some work for my regular job over the weekend. So that's what my weekends were about. But now things are a little different. My weekends are for wine and whiskey and whatever else I can get my hands on. But seriously, though, since I've cut back on the alcohol consumption, I do feel a lot better. I have a lot more mental clarity and focus. And my stomach's even got a little flatter, you know, and the quality of my shows are better when I'm not drinking, you know, so everybody wins. But all right. Okay. So let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about one of my other character flaws. Okay. My legendary ability to miss every cultural moment as it's actually happening. So this is going to be a brand new segment I'm going to do on these type of shows where it's more laid back. I'm going to do a segment called Better Late Than Never. So this is going to be where I finally show up to the conversation that people have had years ago, whether it's a show that everybody's already spoiled, a movie that's been rebooted already, or a trend that died some slow, embarrassing death, and I'm just now discovering it. I admit it, I'm late. I may be a little behind, but I'm committed to being behind with confidence. So I'm going to tell you what I think about some things that you guys probably stopped caring about a couple of years ago. Okay, so like I said, I finally have a little bit of time on my hands, right? So I've been catching up on some old movies that I've been wanting to see. And one of them is Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Okay, so for anyone that doesn't know, it's not a reboot. It's just the sequel to the original Beetlejuice movie. Okay? And I realize some people may not even care about this, but hey, I'm having fun. This is what I want to talk about today. So the first thing is I love that Michael Keaton and the other main characters reprise their roles. I love that Tim Burton came back and directed the sequel. He also directed the first movie. And I just love his take on dark fantasy and comedy horror, that whole genre. It reminds me of some of my favorite movies that he directed. Edward Scissorhands. He directed a couple of the Batmans. My favorite, though, is Batman Returns. But I like a lot of that weird, creepy, Tim Burton-type feel. But I love in this movie how those characters from the original, those afterlife creatures or whatever, they were all staples in this this new version of the movie. So remember the little shrunken head character or whatever, they were in there. Some other familiar aspects of the movie from the original movie. Now, one thing I could have done without was this storyline about Lydia Deetz. That's the, you know, the goth girl, the original goth girl from the original movie, played by Winona Ryder. They gave her a love interest in this movie. And I'll give it to them. They found a kind of a clever way to incorporate it in the movie without being totally annoying. So that was okay. The only disappointment for me with this movie is that since Lydia's father, Charles Deetz, he's deceased in the sequel, okay? Apparently he had some controversy in real life, and I guess the studio didn't want him linked to this brand and this movie anymore, so they kind of killed him off. So although they found a way to incorporate his passing in the story without making it off-brand for the movie, I feel like they missed an opportunity to make this untimely death of his a more prominent part of the story. I would have threw in some mysterious circumstances surrounding his death, and I would have had the family go back to that original house. Remember that original, like, 2-3-story spooky-looking house on the hill, the White House, which was in the sequel. They had that in the sequel, by the way. But I would have used that backdrop to commune with Lydia's father's dead spirit to find out what truly happened to him. And then this would have kind of opened the way to potentially recreating one of the most memorable scenes from the first Beetlejuice, which was that dinner party scene. Remember, it was a dinner party, and they end up having this seance, and the entire group is possessed or something. They do like this conga line to that song, that popular song, 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, but it, you know, that song. So I just feel like they really dropped the ball there. And aside from that, if you're a fan of the original Beetlejuice movie, I think you'll really enjoy the sequel. It doesn't outdo the original, which, you know, is hard to do, but it definitely gives you that feeling of nostalgia from your childhood, if that's what you're looking for. It does give you that. Okay, all right, moving on. So now let's talk about this not-so-new social media trend that has been going around. I guess it's more like a challenge. It's where people post their Cash App, right? And these so-called pay pigs randomly send you money. Have y'all seen this? Has anyone tried this? Okay, so I gave this a try about maybe 2 or 3 days ago. Because I just want to see if it works. I'm not going to block my blessing. I'm seeing folks screenshotting their Cash App. They're getting hundreds of dollars sent to them. Some of them are getting thousands of dollars just from random people who don't know them. All they did was put their Cash App out there. And a lot of these folks, they aren't even cute. So I figured, what do I have to lose? You know, lose. I still look good. I'm still sexy. Let somebody that want to be generous go ahead and send me some weekend drink money. But although I posted it, I think here's the thing. I think it only works for women. Because on my TikTok, I just mentioned it. I said, look, I was like, where are the pay pigs for men at? That's what I want to know. Let's not discriminate and just send the women the money. I put myself out there. Send me some money, too. You know, it may work. It may not. I don't know. I don't have anything to show for it yet. But I know I'm jumping on the trend late. I don't care. I just put it out there. Everyone else is doing it. Maybe someone's going to send me something. Great. People are getting $500,000 and $600,000 for nothing. So, hey, why not? If you want to send me some money, I'll even shout you out on the radio, because that's sponsor money right there. If you're sending $400 and $500, speaking of sponsors, if you're a business owner or entrepreneur, maybe you're an author or a recording artist and you want to sponsor a future episode or be a guest on the show, just shoot me an email at livewithdrandrejerry@gmail.com, and we'd love to have you on. So, yeah, I admit that I'm late to the pay pig trend, but like I said, better late than never. And if any pay pigs are listening right now, my cash tag is Dr. Andre Jerry, okay? All right, y'all, listen, I'm having too much fun with this. Let's take a quick commercial break, but don't go anywhere. When we come back, we've got more random rants and more real talk, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right, class of 2025, let's talk real quick. If you're out here applying for jobs, getting ghosted, overwhelmed, or just straight up tired, hey, I've been there. The search can feel like a full-time job with no paycheck. That's why I always recommend Indeed.com to folks just starting out. It's simple, clean, and gets straight to the point. You set your filters, upload your resume once, and you're off. No fluff, no hoops, just jobs that actually match what you're looking for. And listen, don't let the job boards intimidate you. You don't need it all fixed. Figured out to get started. Just take the first step. If you're ready to stop scrolling and start applying, check out Indeed.com. It helped me, a lot of others, and I know it'll help you too. Log on to Indeed.com today. Are you an unpublished author with a book idea or concept that you'd like to get published? Need help with editing, copywriting, formatting, and other tedious tasks that are required to successfully publish a great book? Fast-track your next book release with Just Be Cars Publishing. Just Be Cars Publishing specializes in helping new and unpublished authors convert their manuscripts into completed published works that are featured on Amazon, Audible, and other major retail platforms. Ready to get started? Email justbecars@gmail.com or visit justbecards.com for more information. Just Be Cars, creating a buzz just because.
Hi, this is Rhea Fry. Check out my new book, Until I Find You, available now wherever books are sold. You can learn more at rheafry.com. That's R-E-A-F-R-E-Y.com. And you are listening to the Artist First Radio Network.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Jerry.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. Hey, thanks for hanging in with me through the commercial break. If you're just joining us, our topic tonight is random rants and real talk. So like I said, this is part three of our ongoing series. And right before the break, we wrapped up our brand new segment called Better Late Than Never. It's a new segment I'm introducing where I talk about basically how late I am to pop culture. So, listen, I think I had too much fun catching up on the pop culture stuff. I'm totally late to the party, but hey, that's the point. I may not be on time, but when I show up, I'm going to try to make it somewhat entertaining for you. All right, so now we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to move from laughs to something a little bit deeper, but not too much. Because part of real talk is about being real and talking about what's going on inside. So let's talk about that last episode. That was some pretty heavy stuff, right? We talked about mental health, childhood trauma. We talked about coping mechanisms as a result of that trauma. It was a lot. And as much as it may have helped you all, it helped me as well, because there were some things that I was just coming to grips with on the air as I was talking, right? And one of those things was the realization that my friendship with John was always toxic. I know y'all are probably like, you on John again? I have been dragging John lately, but it's not personal. But I really, when I was doing the episode last week, it really dawned on me during the episode that he was like never really my friend. He just never was. And that whole thing about, you know, believe people when they reveal to you who they are the first time, he always presented himself as an adversary. From day one, he was one of my bullies. So even though he was posing as a friend, he was just, at best, a frenemy. You saw how quick he turned on me. He betrayed me. It was that same school year he turned on me. And I guess back then I was so desperate for friendship and to be accepted by everybody and by the popular kids that I just went along with that fake friendship for 30 plus years. Looking back, John was always jealous of me. Even back when he was a bully and talking crap about, literally talking crap behind my back, like literally. There was something he must have saw in me that maybe I didn't even see for myself at the time, but there was something about me that made him feel small or inferior or envious or something. Because like I mentioned before, John was one of the most popular kids in the school. And that's not the only thing he had going for him. I mean, John was handsome. He was always cute. He was always the handsome guy. I had to grow into my looks. But John was always a cute guy. The girls loved him. He was always tall. He was like one of the tallest guys in the class or in the school. So why would he feel intimidated by anything I had going on? I was scrawny. I was a nerdy kid. I looked exactly like Steve Urkel, acted like him too, because I was so awkward, trying not to be awkward, and in trying not to be awkward, I was even more awkward. So I was just a mess, you know. Just something as simple as walking down the hallway in between classes was just excruciating for me, because I was like, Andre, watch how you walk. Don't walk to this. Don't walk to that. You know, I was just a mess, all to keep people off me, because back then, if you did anything just out of the ordinary, if God forbid you tripped up or God forbid you dropped your book or anything, it was just on. It was just going to be on. It was going to be on you all day. So I lived on edge in school, trying to be perfect and not make any missteps because I didn't want everybody on me. Don't start with that crap. You know, I'm just trying to get through the day. It was like a war zone. But whatever John had with me, I think that's the reason why he fed me to the wolves in the lunchroom that day and why he never kept any of my secrets and why he refused to provide that character witness for me that I needed all those years ago. I was really relying on him for that. And it didn't even dawn on me that he would decline or say no. It was just like a no-brainer. It was the first name I gave to my attorney. So, I was just dumbfounded. But, you know, looking back on it, all of that was done intentionally to hurt me, to harm me. But it's okay. It's okay. We learn. We grow. We forgive. Always forgive the people who hurt you. I'm not mad or upset with John or whatever. I have been dragging him in the past couple of episodes, but it's all within context and for educational purposes. For educational purposes and to use my life as an illustration to help you with your John. I'm not the only one with a John. Your John is probably worse than mine. And John is not a bad person. I don't want to demonize him. He just was not a good friend to me. That's all. And we're going to get off of John. I'm going to try not to mention him anymore in these shows. I have been dragging the poor guy. Okay, so anyway, I have this other friend named Craig. And I don't know if Craig is listening or not, but honestly, I don't know what's going to come of that particular friendship. Craig and I have known each other for 10 years now. We met each other 10 years ago last month. And the reason why I remember that is because that's when I started my career with the federal government. It was May 2015. Craig was the facilitator in charge of new employee orientation for all federal employees. It was a requirement if you were an incoming civilian. And he introduced every speaker that addressed our group. He did the speaking between speakers. So he sort of facilitated the whole thing. Well, One of those speakers was supposed to be a woman from the base housing office. And I was particularly interested in her briefing because I was new to town. I remember I was staying in a hotel until I found an apartment or some type of permanent housing. Well, for whatever reason, the lady from the housing department who was supposed to speak at a particular time, she didn't show up. So Craig just went on to the next speaker. And I'm panicking on the inside because I've been waiting all morning to hear what this lady has to say because I need to speak with her about getting on the wait list for housing and, you know, tell her my situation. Because at $91 a night, I remember what I was paying, the little money I had saved up, it was just getting drained more and more every day. You know, so I'm antsy and I'm waiting, I'm sitting through all these trainings and I'm watching Craig, you know, speak or whatever. And, you know, I'm just waiting for the lunch break to come so I can speak with him because I'm going to go to him at the lunch break and ask him about this lady and, you know, is she coming to speak later on today or the next day or what? But as I'm watching Craig speak, I can't help but notice that he has this sadness in his eyes. And I remember saying to myself, that man's going through something. I don't know what he's going through, but he's going through something. Something's weighing heavy on him, you know? And I don't think anyone else could discern that, but I don't know, with me just being an empath or whatever, and just, I just saw it. I don't know if anyone else saw it, but I saw it. So anyway, we finally get to lunch and I introduce myself and I give him my whole spiel about, hey, I really need to talk to the lady from the housing office. Do you know if she's coming later today, tomorrow? And, you know, he was like, I don't know whether she's coming back to speak or not. Usually if a person shows up at, you know, or doesn't show up at their appointed time to brief, I just move on to the next speaker. And then he was like, you know, I'll tell you what, it's lunch. I'll take you over to their office. It's right up the street. You can follow me on my bike. I'll take you there. He was driving his motorcycle at the time. So I'm super grateful for his help. I follow him over there. He takes me into the office. You know, he tells the people my situation and who I'm here to speak to and all of that. Turns out the person that I needed to speak to was out of the office. They didn't know when the person would return. And it wasn't a thing like she was at lunch and she'll be back at such and such time. She had been out of the office for, I guess, a couple of days. And so, you know, I guess Craig felt sorry for me. We went back out to my car and his bike, and he was like, hey, look, man, I know your situation. You told me you're new in town. You're staying in the hotel. He said, look, I got a 3-bedroom, you know, duplex or whatever. It's just me. He said, you're more than welcome to take one of the rooms and stay there until you can find you a place, you know, more stable or whatever. He wasn't even going to charge me anything. He just wanted, you know, to get me out of the hotel and just give me some place to stay where I didn't have to worry about paying a whole bunch of money until I found my own apartment or whatever. So I was like, yeah, that sounds cool or whatever. So we went straight from there to his place. And he showed me the place. He was like, hey, this is my spot, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, like I said, you're more than welcome. Don't worry about paying anything. I think it was early in the month. So yeah, he's going to let me stay there to the end of the month or whatever. He said, if you need to stay longer, we'll talk about maybe some payment arrangements or whatever. But he said, for now, just feel free to stay for the rest of the month until you find something. I'm like, okay, bet. So I move in and we just click. We click and we just become fast friends. That sad look in his eyes that I was telling you about before, it turns out that he was going through a divorce. He was at the beginning stages of going through a divorce. And he was separated from his wife. His two kids, I think, were teenagers at the time, young teenagers. And during that interim period where they were separated and going through a divorce, he moved out and was just extremely sad. Loved his family, but obviously made some mistakes. And, you know, the wife took all she could take and was, you know, just going to move on with her life. And that's what that sadness was. I knew it was something. But all of that came out, you know, in the weeks and as you spend time with people and learn to learn more about them, we're learning more about each other. And so that's the heaviness that he was carrying. And he was just perpetually sad during that time. You know, he cracked jokes here or there, but he was just wearing this heaviness. So I guess long story short, Craig and I became like really close friends, like brother type friends. And we got into cycling. He got me into getting my first motorcycle. I learned how to ride a motorcycle. He taught me that. He introduced me to camping and hiking and different little things. He was doing all of these activities to keep his mind off of his family and off of the divorce and all the stuff he was going through. And looking back, that's what he was doing at the time. I just thought, you know, oh, this guy is cool. He's into this. He's into that. But he was just trying to keep his mind occupied. And I can see that now. And we just developed a bond and became really, really close. And so Craig's like family. Over the years, you know, we continue to stay in contact and stay close. We were always close. I think we started to drift a little bit once I started going on these tours to like Saudi and moving to these different bases and things like that. The distance kind of put a little bit of a strain, but we were still, you know, keep in contact. But I think the first break that we had in terms of, because we never had an argument. To this day, we never had an argument. But I think the first little fracture in our friendship was when that woman, when he started dating that woman. And I talked about her in one of my other rants. I think it was the very first rant episode I did. When she came into his life, that's when things started to take a turn. We all got along at first. We all hung out, and I was the third wheel for the longest, and it was never a problem. And then at some point, me and his girlfriend had some type of disagreement, a petty, stupid disagreement at that, and just was never able to recover from it. And some kind of way, Craig and I were able to still keep our friendship intact. But it came to a point to where I didn't F with her anymore. Like, I didn't want to be, if she was around, I'm not going to be around, because I'm seeing that this person is just not, I can't speak for where she is now, but she went through a really tough spot where she was really difficult and very nasty, just very nasty. And I'm like, why are you with this woman? And so I fell out with the girlfriend. It always sucks when your best friend has a girlfriend that you don't get along. That sucks. If anybody has ever had to deal with that dynamic, it just sucks. But some kind of way, Craig and I were able to navigate it as best we could until it got to the point to where, look, I'm not going to be over here anymore. All this third wheeling and thruffle and hanging out, all of that's just done. I cannot be around this woman. I understand y'all are dating or whatever. I'll hang with you when I can, but I can't do her. I just can't do her. And, you know, so that plus the distance and going back and forth to Saudi and these other places, that kind of just put us in a weird spot. And we weren't as close. We were still cool, but we weren't as close as we used to be. And then, so fast forward a couple of years, I come back from Saudi, and, he's just a straight out atheist now, and has been for like 3+ years. And I grew up with, but I'm used to the Craig that was preaching the Bible, and we talk about scriptures, and he was like a spiritual sort of mentor. You know, he used to be a pastor. So when I come back from Saudi and he's like full blown atheist, it was just, at first I thought it was like maybe a joke or a phase or something like that. And, you know, cause he goes through different little phases and stuff. And so I thought maybe the atheist stuff was just a phase. No, he went full throttle, and it got worse and worse and worse in terms of the rhetoric. And he's not a quiet atheist. He's not one of those atheists that's just going to allow you to still believe in God and have your beliefs. He actively tries to pull people away from God. and their beliefs, and to really fervently tell them that what they're believing in is a lie and none of this stuff is real, and just, you know, very intense. And so I'm the type of person, you don't have to have, it helps if you have the same belief system as I do in terms of the friendship. I can let you have your beliefs, but when you are like coming at me, like, no, this is, you still on that Jesus crap and da, 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 that type of vibe. And it is, I saw where it had the potential to take a combative turn. And rather than let it get to that point, I just sort of backed away. And maybe instead of checking in twice a week, it was just one. And now we're at the point to where I've been in Puerto Rico for, what, since the middle of March, near the end of March. And I've spoken to Craig maybe once. So I don't know where that friendship stands. I don't want to write him off. I don't want to do that because I don't think he would write me off. You know, I'm not perfect. But it's very hard for me in my spiritual walk where I am to be really close and chummy and just buddy-buddy with a full-blown atheist who is very vocal and proud of his atheism. So it's just, that's one of those friendships where I don't know what to do. I prayed about it. I love Craig, but between the atheist stuff and that girl, I can't. So I'm going to do what I can to keep that relationship and friendship alive as best I can, given this new distance that we have where he's in Warner Robins and I'm in Puerto Rico. But I don't know. That's a difficult one for me. Cause like I said, I love Craig a lot, and he's even met Renata, my friend Renata, who is, the reason why I have this show. And, I have a picture, and I'm going to print it out and put it somewhere, but I have a picture of Craig and Renata together at one of, Renata's book signings. And so to have a picture with two of my, you know, closest friends pictured together like that, and they're not necessarily friends, but they've met each other and like each other, I think I need to print that out and put that up somewhere. I don't know what made me just think about that picture. But, yeah, I'm going to have to just keep you guys updated on the Craig situation. I think very soon after this broadcast, I'm going to reach out to him. I don't know if he still tunes in to the show or what have you. But I'm going to try. And if it gets to the point to where it just no longer seems to be feasible, which I don't think is at that point because there's a lot of love there, I don't know. I just have to keep you updated. I'm looking through my topics here to see what else I wanted to rant about. We got a little bit more time left. We talked about the mental health episode. We talked about Craig. You know, I have another childhood friend, too. We talked about John. I've dragged John enough. I have another childhood friend named Jerome, and he was sort of like my other best friend growing up, and we haven't spoken in a while. There's a bit of a rift there, so I need to figure out what I'm doing with that relationship, and that one's an interesting one because I'm his daughter's godparent, but on their side, so I'm the reach out person. I'm always the one that's reaching out. Hey, haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on? Everything good? Hey, how's my goddaughter? And I was sending her messages and stuff like that. I don't get anything back in return, you know, and that's frustrating for me. I don't want to, where I'm at now, I don't want to continue with friendships like that. If I got to be the one always reaching out, it's not fair. You know, you have all of my addresses. You have my contact information. Reach out to me sometimes. You know, have Rosalia send me a a letter or something, or send me a video message saying hello or happy birthday or go to hell or something, you know? And so I hate to just throw that friendship away, especially since it's connected to my goddaughter, but I don't have the energy to be the one constantly reaching out and don't get anything back in return. I'm just so over that. That's not a real, true friendship. And I know every friendship is nuanced and everyone's different and have their own way of communicating. I'm talking about just basic communication here. If you're friends with someone, if you have a friendship that you care about, don't always put it on the other person to be the one to check in and reach out. Eventually that gets old and they may do it for years, maybe even decades. But do something to meet that person halfway. So where I am in my life now, I have a small circle of friends, a handful of people that I call a friend. Back when I was younger, and you guys, I've shared enough to where you already know the psychology behind that, but I used to think the more friends I had, the more popular I was. I just wanted to have friends all around, this friend, that friend. I got friends in this state. I don't care about that stuff anymore. If I can't count on you to come help me move, if I can't count on you to call and check up on me after you know I lost my mom, after you know I just got out of a debilitating breakup, or just common courtesy to say, hey, hello, I haven't heard from you. You doing all right? Where are you at now? Are you in the States? Where are you? Have you gone to hell yet? I mean, just anything. Give me something. I'll take anything. But just don't put it on me to always be that person to reach out, because I'm not him anymore. I'm not doing that. I'll leave the door open if you want to contact me, but Mr. Reach Out all the time, all of that, I'm done with it. I'm not doing it. I got too much other stuff I want to do. I'm in a different phase in my life right now. I want peace. And I'm not going to be fighting to be anybody's friend, you know? So that's just where I am with all of that. I think that's a good place to leave it for tonight. I pretty much talked about all the stuff that I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to have a little bit of fun, have a little bit of conversation that wasn't so uptight. So I've enjoyed this. I hope you guys have as well. Whether we're talking about toxic friendships, emotional boundaries, pay pigs, one of these pay pigs are going to send me some money. I don't know who it is. Somebody is going to send me a random Cash App. I just feel it. It may take months from now, but somebody's going to send it. I'm going to update you guys on it. But regardless of what we're talking about, the goal is all the same. It's just to tell the truth, to feel it fully, and just to take whatever you learn and do something with it. All right? If you want to catch the replay to this show, you can go to artistfirst.com and check out some of our other shows while you're at it. We have a lot of awesome shows on this network, Relevant with Renato being one of my favorites next to mine. But you can catch the replay here, artistfirst.com, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube. Don't forget to grab your copy of my new book, Not Just a Diploma. Like I said, it's more than advice for graduates. It's sort of like a survival guide for life after all the applause and the fanfare. And listen, if protecting your peace means changing your number or walking away from people that you've outgrown or saying no and saying it full-throated with your whole chest, then, you know, so be it. All right. I've enjoyed you guys. I hope you have too. I'm Dr. Andre Jerry. This is Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, and I'll catch you next Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Same time, same truth, right here on the Artist First Radio Network. Until then, stay grounded, stay growing, and stay out of group chats that drain your spirit. All right. Good night, everybody. Peace.